This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. These days, you might drive by a group of kids playing kickball and do a double take, because with a closer look, it's entirely possible that what seemed to be a bunch of kids is really a cluster of 30-somethings. A lot of adults are hanging on to their youth these days, from professors at Harvard and Yale delivering papers on Buffy the Vampire Slayer to adult book groups reading Harry Potter to young parents with babies strapped to their backs grooving at a Coldplay concert. Writer Christopher Noxon, himself a kickball player, says it's a trend and calls these childlike adults rejuveniles. Noxon's new book, Rejuvenile, Kickball, Cartoons, Cupcakes, and the Reinvention of the American Grown-Up, details the ins and outs of these Peter Pans. We'll talk to Noxon and the author of an article on a similar New York phenomenon called Grups. And later in the hour, a conversation with the maker of a documentary on the creator of the cult comic Tintin. But first, have you been rejuvenized? Are you a skateboarding PTA member? Or have you simply missed the trend and are sick of sneakers and gamesters at the office? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Christopher Noxon, author of Rejuvenile, is with us from our studios at NPR West. Thanks for being with us, Christopher.
Thanks for having me, Lynn.
Let's start with a definition. What exactly is a rejuvenile?
Well, the working definition that I used when writing the book was anyone who has tastes or mindsets that are traditionally associated with people younger than themselves. There's a lot of words out there that describe this, you know, basic phenomena. In England, they call them kidults, and that basically describes people in middle age who hang on to youth culture. Sociologists talk about adolescence, which is this kind of extended period between adolescence and adulthood. Marketers talk about something called Peter Pandemonium, which describes, you know, boomers who kind of cultivate sort of childlike consumer tastes.
Well, is this really new or have there always been, immature adults?
I think there have always been immature adults. And when I went back in the book to sort of discover the roots of the rejuvenile, I found there were a lot of amazing counterexamples around 1900 when sort of the ideas of childhood and adulthood first kind of coalesced. I mean, you saw the first, you know, Peter Pan was in 1902 and Alice in Wonderland and the first amusement parks and the first, you know, mass marketed candies and children's clothes. And, you know, it was also a time of great flux and sort of uncertainty. And I think part of what's going on here is our own kind of anxiety about the adult life and kind of retreating back to a, on one level, escapist place, but also a more adaptable and kind of open one.
You mentioned boomers. What was the term you used for boomers?
Peter Pandemonium.
Peter Pandemonium.
I love
that's,
that.
I think that's my favorite so far. But actually, did this start with boomers, do you think? The phenomenon you're sort of describing is
the latest, you know, incarnation of this virulent strain we see today, I think absolutely started with the boomers. I mean, we forget, but they were called the flower children. And it was
right.
Sort of wrapped up in this kind of anti-establishment idea that they were fighting against this Ozzie and Harriet ideal of what adulthood was about. But I think that the boomers do it in a distinctly different way. Among the people that I talked to in the book are a lot of boomer toy collectors who are, you know, hoarding Barbies and Matchbox and Easy Bake Ovens and things. And I think what it's about for most of them is nostalgia. It's about kind of revisiting some kind of dreamy, idealized version of their own past. And for most of the people in the book, the Xers and the Yers and even the older folks, it's about really creating a more playful, energetic now. It's about having a childlike part of their lives as adults.
Yeah. So you're saying that it's a good thing for adults to find their inner child, as it were?
Well, there's a broad range of people I'm talking about here, and clearly you can really go too far. You know, I talk to people in the book who are kind of Disney freaks who go, you know, 2, 3, sometimes 7 days a week to a Disney park. Or, you know, the common misperception is that the rejuvenile is the kind of 40-year-old virgin who's stuck in his mom's basement collecting action figures. And, you know, clearly that is not a kind of healthy model of adulthood. But for, you know, for the vast majority of people I met, these are people with minivans and mortgages and healthy family relationships, who also just don't want to give up stuff that has always given them real pleasure and serve some real kind of fundamental energizing function in their adult life.
All right. I want to ask you about those people, but I just have to go back for 1 second. We don't have to dwell on it. But did you say that people go to Disneyland Disney World 2, 3, and 7 days a week?
Yeah, they're called Disnoids within the park. These are people who have annual passes and very mysterious financial means. I don't know how they do it, but they have these sort of Talmudic expertises about parts of the park. I mean, there's a sort of haunted mansion lady, and there's a guy who specializes in the person who plays the player piano on Main Street. And yeah, it's sort of the extreme outer reaches of the rejuvenile world.
And presumably they don't go there with children. Of their own.
Well, and here's one of those mind-bending statistics that I found out when I was writing, was half of the people who go to Disney World are adults without children. Disney World is the most popular adult vacation destination in the world.
All right. I don't have anything to say.
It's pretty astounding.
Okay. Let's go back to that family that you're saying is sort of, you know, maybe the new norm or the new normal is the parents who want to stay young so much so that they kind of act like kids sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason that I wrote this book was because I found myself playing with my own kids in ways that I'm pretty sure my own family found ridiculous. I mean, I sort of greeted fatherhood as a chance to, you know, get busy on the slides and unearth my Lego collection. And I talked to a lot of other parents who shared that same impulse. I call them play-along parents. And, you know, I do think there's a tremendous amount of anxiety out there about being too much of a friend to your kid and not enough of a parent. And I do think that's a legitimate concern. I mean, it's easy to sort of forget that your first role is to kind of raise healthy and happy kids and prepare them. But at the same time, I really have become convinced that if you can kind of share and build a foundation of fun and sort of mutual experience and go to the Pixar movie with them and, you know, do the princess tea party, you know, that when it comes time to kind of lay down the law and sort of impart a lesson, they listen better. They're much more receptive, and you know, you have a much broader range of experience with your children.
All right, we are talking about the phenomenon of rejuveniles with author Christopher Noxon. If you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. And we're going to take a call now from Jolene, and she is calling from Texas. Hi, Jolene.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
My comment, I'll just get right to it, is I can't understand people that, you know, that are 40, go look in the mirror, grow up. And how can these people produce children that go on to grow up healthy when the parent is still a child? You know, it's the old thing, child raising a child, right, over again, except these people are in their 40s. 30s and 40s and not, you know, teenagers trying to raise children.
So you don't have much patience for this trend.
No, I don't have any patience at all. I'm sick and tired of looking at people, you know, that are 30 and 40 and they can't see what they actually are, you know, and here they're old. You know, they're not children anymore. They're not even teenagers and they're not even young adults. They are old. And even if they go under the knife, and you can tell that too, I think it's just, you know, hey, grow up. That's my last comment.
All right, Julian, thanks very much. I'm curious to see what Christopher Noxon has to say in response to that. Grow up, Christopher.
Well, I mean, I come across that a lot among people in the book I call the harumphing codgers. These are sort of social critics and other people who believe that adulthood is a really serious perilous business that is almost entirely joyless. And, you know, I do think it's absolutely understandable that, you know, there are people out there who really do need to grow up in very, very specific ways and take responsibility and sort of face and deal with complicated, difficult problems. But, you know, I make a really important distinction between what I think of as sort of childlike behavior and childish. And, you know, childishness is no virtue. This isn't anything that I think any of us want to aspire to. It's, you know, being short-sighted and shirking responsibility and leaving messes for other people to deal with. And but I also think that the childlikeness is something that is worth protecting. And, you know, I'm thinking here of sort of the ability to appreciate and, you know, absorb the unfamiliar and to learn languages. Kids are just better at certain things than adults are, and we forget that as we grow up. And I think that, you know, that sort of open, wondrous, sort of that capacity for make-believe is something that is one of the great strengths of humanity.
You know, Gen Xers and Gen Yers, who I think is pretty much who you're talking about here for the most part.
Not really.
No.
No, I mean, I had assumed that when I started, but when I went out and talked to people, you find so many, you know, the Disney obsession is shared by people in their 50s and 60s. You know, there are teenagers who are actually nostalgic for childhood. You see, you know, Care Bears merchandise and Strawberry Shortcake stuff on teenagers. And, you know, this movie High School Musical, I don't know if you've seen it, but I was amazed. I saw it a couple of weeks ago with my kids. And one of the fundamental plot lines is, can't we all just go back and be like we were in kindergarten?
So this really changes parenthood. This is one big thing, though. The caller that we just heard was questioning how these people who are not acting their age can raise kids. It seems like you're saying they can do it very well. It's just different.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of this is a lot of the real reactionary sort of emotional response that people have, I think, is based mostly on sort of what sociologists call age norms. These are things that have been sort of culturally transmitted to us through generations. And if you really take a hard look at them, a lot of them are just arbitrary. I mean, there's no reason why kickball can't be just as fun as racquetball, or why spending an hour playing a video game is any worse than watching TV.
How tongue-in-cheek is this, or is there irony involved here?
Absolutely. I mean, for a lot of the—I mean, every rejuvenile I met had their own particular mix of compulsion or idealism. But I do think that there are certainly a lot of folks out there in their 30s particularly who do it, you know, as a sort of arch kind of exercise in kitschiness. I mean, you see that a lot among the dodgeball players. But the other thing is that, you know, even if you start as a kind of ironic exercise, it's often just overtakes you. I mean, kickball is a great example, and dodgeball too, where, you know, you might start it because it's sort of a hoot and a lark and fun. But once you start playing, you can't maintain any irony at all. You completely get sucked in.
All right, we're talking about what Christopher Noxon calls rejuveniles, grown-ups who refuse to give up their toys and their playtime. We're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. Send us an email to talk@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking with Christopher Noxon about his book, Rejuvenile. It's the term he coined for a new breed of adults, grown-ups with minivans and mortgage payments who don't want to give up their cartoons, kickball, or cupcakes. You'll find an excerpt from Christopher Noxon's book, Rejuvenile, at npr.org. And you're invited to join our discussion. Would you call yourself a rejuvenile, or are you sick of the trend and just want grown-ups to grow up? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. And joining us now is Adam Sternberg. He reported on the phenomenon of the childlike adult in the April 3rd edition of New York Magazine. He calls them grups, and he is joining us now from our New York Bureau. Thanks for being with us, Adam.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what's a grup? Is it the same thing as a rejuvenile or something different?
Well, I think it's probably same species, different breed. It's definitely part of the same phenomenon that Christopher was talking about, people who are rethinking what it means to be an adult and thinking that perhaps they could incorporate, you know, more youthful elements into it. But the person that I was writing about focuses more on a certain kind of urban adult, usually in their 30s or 40s, essentially a grown-up slacker. These are Generation X. And the way in which they're essentially prolonging the period of their life that we normally associate with your early 20s sort of indefinitely.
You know what I loved about the New York Magazine article that were the photographs accompanying it, because there were these photographs. I'm going to try and explain it. Maybe you can describe it better. But of both men and women, and they would be like, say, I think there were like 9 maybe photos or 12 photos of all next to each other of people of obviously different ages dressing exactly the same way, and the age range was maybe 20 to 50.
That's correct. And they, the people on the cover, the men that are on the cover, they're all real people wearing their own clothes from their own wardrobes. We invited them in and we said, you know, if you have a zip-up sweatshirt, bring that. If you have a messenger bag, bring that. If you have an iPod, bring that. They all had all three things. And it's true, when you see them side by side, it was a great way to illustrate that this is the kind of person you see. And when you're in New York or any big city, I mean, you'll see them everywhere.
Yeah. And what about the attitude of grups to the whole, to parenting?
Well, it was interesting. I found that contrary to what some people might expect, these aren't people who are forestalling responsibility. They're actually kind of excited about having kids. But a lot of them see the model that was passed down to them from their parents, which to them seems to revolve around sort of at a certain point, you give up on the thing that you really love. You quit your rock band or you stop pursuing a comedy career or whatever that thing might be. And they don't want to make that trade-off. So their idea is this actually makes them better parents because they're going to have kids growing up in an environment where their parents are creatively fulfilled, are excited about what they're doing, rather than a previous generation in which the norm may have been to sort of think it's either kids or follow your dream. They want to try to do both.
And I think it was in your article that you described a group of fathers who get together with their kids and play like a book club, I guess, or something. They play their favorite rock music and then they sort of argue with each other over, you know, which rock group the kids should be listening to.
Oh, yes. I talked to a guy who said that he gets into arguments with other dads where he insults the musical taste of the other dad's five-year-old son. You know, the other dad, I think, said his son was into Wilco, so this guy was sort of saying, oh, Wilco is so over, as if somehow the five-year-old should, you know these things.
That's really mature.
Well, and you know, and there are extremes, as Christopher said. I mean, in this phenomenon as well, you know, you run into people who they start to use their kid as kind of what I came to think of as like a little Mr. Potato Head, where they would dress them in funny shirts like the Sex Pistols, and they would make them listen to music and say, hey, look, I like the Strokes, and my son likes the Strokes. But if your son is 4 years old, he's just going to like whatever you tell him to like because he just wants you to like him.
Yeah. So, Christopher, what's your reaction to the world Adam's describing? It's pretty similar, I think, to what...
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's all part of the larger kind of impulse. What worries me most about the kind of parenting that Adam's describing is what's the upshot? How does that play out? What's the end game? I mean, I've got little kids. I've got three children, and I love to dress one of my sons in an ABCD shirt or ABDCD. but what I'm concerned about is what are they going to rebel against? I think it'll be curious. It'll be interesting to see how these kids grow up because I think it would be a great irony if a generation of kids sort of rebels against them and becomes these Alex P. Keaton conservatives, you know?
Could happen. That's the way it usually goes. We're talking about rejuveniles, grups, in other words, grown-ups who still like to act like kids. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255, and we're going to take some calls now. First of all, let's go to Christopher in Salem, Oregon. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
Great points you guys are bringing up. I'm a 23-year-old male married with a 1-year-old on the 25th. And, you know, we purposefully kind of wanted to have kids this young. It's kind of ironic you played young at heart because we wanted to kind of be able to play with them, be able to do the young things with them. And also I wanted to bring up when I was growing up, people always said that we were all growing up too fast, that we were becoming adults too quick. But it seems that it's becoming quite the opposite, that we're becoming more childlike. And I was wondering, what effect is that going to have on possibly my child when he grows up? Like you said, we're going to have these conservatives rebelling against this. We're raising them within a counterculture, so they're going to counterculture that to become, the exact opposite.
What do you think about that, Christopher Knox? And you did address that just before we got this call a little bit, but I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, yeah, one more thing. Go ahead, Christopher.
Okay, I just wanted to the models of you know, our parents. Well, in my personal experience, that model has failed. I've got a mother and father who divorced, and I had a father who went into the military really early to give up his dreams of playing music, playing rock music specifically. And after the divorce, he is now playing in a rock band every weekend, living this childlike dream that he wanted to do. But,
Interesting. So he's rejuveniled at a late age, it sounds like.
He's about 55 now, so it's So I think it's a really good trend. I think it's, you know, creativity and imagination is key, especially now because of the times. And I don't think it's a bad trend. And that's all I got to say. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks so much for calling. Interesting, that last point that the caller made, Christopher Knox, and that his dad decided to sort of head in this direction at a much later age.
Yeah, he raises a couple of really interesting points. One, I do think that a lot of the people that I met while writing the book, like myself, were sort of kids of boomers who were kind of on these epic quests of self-actualization. And, you know, there's this sense that many of us in our 30s and 40s kind of grew up too fast. You know, my folks got divorced when I was 4, and you know, when I was a kid, I wanted nothing more than to be a grown-up. I had, you know, pictures of 40s film stars on my walls, and, like, I couldn't wait to be taken seriously. And I found that a lot among the rejuveniles in the book, that there was this sense that we missed out on something. And as 30s or in our 40s, we finally grown up enough to really appreciate the pleasures of being a kid.
All right, let's take a call now from Larry, and he's in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Christopher Adam, or... Thank you so much for taking my call. Actually, on the topic, I had a question. I think there's I'm a little bit older, so I'm not part of the Generation Y or X, but I think that in some respects this is very good in a sense that people follow dreams and certainly help their kids to follow their dreams. On the other hand, I wonder, my question is this really a generational phenomenon? The other side of that is, I think this generation has more disposable income and likes debt, maybe consumption a little bit more, seems to have less of a compelling reason to save, possibly even build a future, because you don't have anything really hanging over you. And that's the only concern I've got about taking this too far, where you're always kind of chasing the thing you love without kind of building the future. I just wanted to kind of get your take on that.
All right. Thanks so much, Christopher and Adam.
Well, I will say that that was one of my main worries that I came across again and again, was the role of the kind of corporate force here. I mean, I do think that there is a tremendous sort of expertise and attention that's paid to youth culture by the media and by marketing. And I do feel like there's a kind of cultural tractor beam which draws people back into that sweet spot that marketers talk about. And, you know, that's a kind of nefarious external force that I think all rejuveniles really need to sort of recognize and come to grips with. You know, some of this is very human, and I think some of it is very admirable. And that childlike energy, I think, is absolutely worth protecting. But I think it's too easy to kind of fall into that childish sort of consumption mode, and, you know, the lack of impulse control and the desire to have the shiny thing and the candy, you know. That's something that I think all rejuveniles really need to sort of recognize and deal with.
And there are so many shiny things around now. Adam Sternberg. And I mean, there are more adult toys now. And by that I mean, you know, iPods and games, video games, things like that, you know.
Sure. And there's ways in which all of those technologies, I think, allow older and older people to stay in touch with what is the leading edge of the culture in a way that was impossible. You know, even 10 or 15 years ago, I spoke to this one guy who pointed out that, you know, it used to be that when you hit about 30, it was really hard to keep up with what the hot new band was or what the new sound was, because you'd have to go to your local record store and, you know, read some obscure zine. Now all that information is right there on the internet for you. It's very easy to find. The music is easy to download. So there's a way in which I think technology, just in a pure sort of neutral way, is kind of driving this. But as Christopher pointed out, wherever there's a group identified or a behavior identified, the marketers are sure to follow and figure out how to sell things to them.
All right, here's an email now that raises an issue that I was wondering about a little bit as well, from Noelle. And she writes, "I would bet that this mostly refers to men. How could women have time for this? They are too busy cleaning up or taking care of these guys. Maybe some women can participate in a few retro activities, but we aren't slackers to the degree that these guys are." I think they're referring to you, Adam and Christopher. "I'm 37. My husband is 43, and we're expecting our first child next month here in Northern California, and no, my husband is no rejuvenile." Okay, guys.
Well, I'm 37. I have three kids and, you know, all the trappings of the adult life. And, you know, I really, first of all, I don't think that this is all about men. I think certainly there is that sort of cultural stereotype that it's a lot easier for men to be transported back to the boyhood than it is for women. But if you go out and actually talk to a lot of these folks, there's a skipping movement up in San Francisco that's led by women. Half the adult players of kickball are women. There's a tremendous amount of sort of – there's a girl version of this. What's interesting is that women generally go back to a much more sort of innocent and kind of a very gender-specific version of childhood than guys do. Guys will go back to a much more sort of macho and what I think led more naturally back to what Adam's been describing is this kind of rock and roll 20-something experience.
Adam, are you married? Do you have kids? Or
I'm 35 years old. I'm single, no kids, and I could have easily have been the 10th person on the cover of the magazine. In fact, the day it came out, I remember carrying it on the subway platform and looking down at what I was wearing, and I just blended very easily. But it was funny what Christopher was saying. When I started working on this article, originally it was supposed to only be about men. But when I started talking to couples and married couples in particular, I realized that there is an equal female version of this. And, you know, here in New York, at Brooklyn, there's a thing called Mommy Happy Hour, where bars will you know, open their doors to mommies with strollers to come in and have a drink, and they're always full.
Adam Sternberg wrote the article Up with Grups in the April 3rd issue of New York Magazine, and Christopher Noxon is author of Rejuvenile, Kickball, Cartoons, Cupcakes, and the Reinvention of the American Grown-Up. And you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. All right, we're going to take another call now from Elisa, I think it is, in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Elisa.
You got that totally perfect. Usually people hack it to pieces. But my comment was mostly about the fact that I don't understand why people get so angry with people like us who like to have fun. And contrary to what a lot of people seem to think, we are very, you know, because I have a large group of friends, it is this way. We play, we go to Disneyland, we have a great time together, but we have huge responsibilities, and we're actually the most successful of our friends who are less serious. You know, and that's what I don't understand is the whole, we save money just as well as everybody else, but we enjoy and we feel like if everyone else relaxed, this world would be a much better place for it.
Now, are you single or married?
I am married, and my husband and I both have the exact same attitude, and we don't have children yet because we consciously don't want that responsibility because we know life will have to change a bit, but we buy toys on a weekly basis because we like them. We don't keep them. We don't collect them like collectors. We open up all of our toys. We have Rock'em Sock'em robots. That's helped many an argument. And, you know, we enjoy the fact that we can make our choices. We moved into a very large house. It was much too big for us, but we lucked out, got a great deal, went with it, have a swimming pool, have a game room, love to throw parties with friends, and our friends have a good time with us. My sister, who is very successful, probably a millionaire by now, younger, and it just seems as though she's so ultra-responsible, but yet we go to a toy store and we play with the toys. We throw footballs around and have a good time, and it's like we know how to let loose and let go. My husband's an animator, so you know he followed his heart and went into art and got it happened to get a great job as an animator and has, you know, that 9-to-5 job, comes home. We, you know, go to movies, and it's just, I think it's more of the relaxed mentality. So I actually get angry, like your first caller way in the beginning, who she was mad at us. And it's like, I think it's a jealousy thing because we're enjoying our lives and having a good time and take the responsibility seriously, but also just have fun.
All right. Thanks for your call, Elisa.
Thank you.
It is interesting what Elisa was saying and you were saying, Christopher, that you encountered it too, that people get mad at this. They really resent it somehow.
Yeah, there's a commentator in Milwaukee on a radio show out there who's recently sort of targeted the book, and you know that she said that after reading it for a little while, she felt like she was going to vomit. And what the world obviously needs now is a major economic collapse, and children need to go hungry, and people need to be selling pencils on the streets for us to maintain or get back to some sense of semblance of order, you know. And I think that's really revealing of what the rejuvenile is reacting against. Because, you know, I do think that there's this sort of age-old sense that adulthood is about pulling up your bootstraps and assuming this much more serious, sort of methodical, regular mentality. And, you know, I'm not down for that. And I think that, you know, you can still be responsible and still have that demanding job and yet maintain these things that have always given you pleasure.
But is it ultimately a selfish movement or a selfish trend? Maybe that's what people are reacting to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it could be considered that way. And certainly in some of the people I write about, it is pretty self-involved. But like your last caller, I do write in the book about the child-free movement and the number of people who've decided not to have kids specifically because they don't want that extra responsibility. It'll get in the way of their playtime. And, you know, on one level, that's pretty self-involved and pretty selfish. But on another one, why shouldn't those people not have kids? Maybe it's a good thing that we live in an age when adulthood doesn't necessarily have to mean bringing somebody else into the world that you're going to be resentful of.
Christopher Noxon and Adam Sternberg, stay with us. We're going to finish up this discussion after we take a short break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Here are some of the other stories we're following today at NPR News. In India's financial capital, Mumbai, more than 140 people were killed today in a series of bomb attacks on the city's commuter rail system. Hundreds more were injured in what authorities called a well-coordinated terrorist attack. And the Pentagon today said that all detainees at Guantanamo Bay and in U.S. military custody across the world are entitled to protections under the Geneva Conventions. This is a reversal of the White House's stance that suspected terrorists aren't guaranteed these protections. As always, you can hear details of these stories and much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Right now on Talk of the Nation, we're going to wrap up our conversation about rejuveniles and grups with my guests, Christopher Noxon and Adam Sternberg. And let's go to a call from Carrie in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Good. And I'll just make it quick here. I'm 48. And I'm just now starting to get my gray hair. I think acting young is keeping me young, actually. But my daughter, who's 21 now, she had me start taking her to the mall when she was 10 or 11, I guess it was. And like, we'd pick up all her girlfriends and go. And so I'm used to all that kind of stuff. And I had a regular job. I was 9 to 5. And whenever they asked me, the kids would ask me, they're all well-adjusted. I'm still married for 30 years. The kids would say, you know, hey, Dad, let's go play. Let's go do something. I'd drop everything and say, yeah, let's go for it. And I think that really helped to keep them well-adjusted. And I still act young. All their friends think I'm 35. And I see people my age that I know that are they look old. I mean, you know, they're gray hair, wrinkled, and they work 24/7. They tell their kids, no, I can't do that right now. And their parents get divorced. The kids turn out to be drug addicts or whatever. You know, it's terrible. And I just wanted to comment on that.
And your kids are all well-adjusted, you're saying?
I mean, yeah, it seems like... If you don't tell your children that, yeah, sure, I can go play with you right now, or, you know, if you neglect them, I know people that have kept TV away from them when they were growing up, and the kids that had their TV or whatever not having any fun, two of them are in jail, you know, so I don't know if that has anything to do with anything, but I'm sure it has a lot to do with it, you know.
All right, well, thanks so much for calling, Carrie.
Thank you.
So this is a way to be closer to your kids in some ways, I guess, is part of what Carrie's saying, and to maybe it keeps kids from rebelling so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think for my experience writing about what I call the play-along parents, and even as a dad myself, what I've had to sort of reckon with is that sometimes you can get too involved in your kids' play and really intrude and sort of take a place that's that gets in the way of them exploring play for themselves. I mean, I had to kind of take a step back from the playground and realize that sometimes I don't need to go down the slide with my kid. Sometimes he needs to find the playmate on his own.
That's a point. Let's go to John in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I think Christopher has done a bit of disservice to those of us who like to really enjoy life and to engage in some things that people might consider juvenile. I think by naming the movement, he has sort of sealed its doom by giving it a lifespan now and giving credence to those who will argue against it in some ways. I'm not sure how salient that point is as far as the logistics of it, but I certainly have a fear that when I have my child in the next few months, that she will be somewhat of a pariah with her father out there playing with her on the playground.
Because it's now been named, you mean?
I'm afraid of that. You know, every movement, once it's named, you know, it's got a lifespan, and it will find its way to either become, you know, ultimately so kitschy that it can't possibly survive, or it will have so many people working against it that it'll take on a life of its own.
All right, well, that's a good point. I'm going to see what Christopher thinks of that. Thanks so much for calling, John.
All right, thank you.
So have you doomed this?
Well, gosh, I would love to think that this little book had that much power. I mean, I think that this is a cultural current that goes back, you know, 100 years at least. And I think that this comes from, you know, commercial forces and also psychological ones. I don't think that just, you know, this word is going to somehow change people's behavior that much.
Yeah. Adam Sternberg, you know, we never got you to explain the origin of the word grups, I don't think. I just remembered that, and it's a really nice story. I think it's a funny story, so I wanted to tell it.
Well, we had started talking about this in the office in terms of doing an article about it, and just for our own purposes, it got sort of tiresome saying, yeah, the article about the guys who dress like they're still 22 years old. So we're looking for a word to use, and I brought up this old Star Trek episode in which Kirk and Spock and the crew land on a planet that's entirely populated by children, and they keep saying grups, 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 and Kirk and Spock finally figure out that what they're saying is a contraction of grown-ups, because all the grown-ups on their planet have died, and now the children are running things. So we started calling them grups, and then that stuck for the article.
All right. Grups and rejuveniles. Thanks so much for being with us, Adam Sternberg. He wrote the article Up with Grups in the April 3rd issue of New York Magazine. And Christopher Noxon, author of Rejuvenile, Kickball, Cartoons, Cupcakes, and the Reinvention of the American Grown-Up.
Thanks, Lynn.